In the years since the Darren Wilson, Michael Brown story in Ferguson here in the St. Louis suburbs, there has been a lot of talk about police department reform, both here in St. Louis and all across the country. Documentarian Peter Nix spent 2 years embedded with the police department in Oakland, California, which is trying to reset itself after years of high crime rates and scandals. The finished product is called The Force. That's the name of the documentary, which will debut tonight at 8 o'clock Central Time on Channel 9 here in St. Louis and on other PBS stations around the country. It's part of the network's Independent Lens series. I had a chance to watch it over the weekend, and I asked Peter to join me here this afternoon to talk about it. Hi, Pete. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
Thank you. What made you want to focus on the cops of Oakland, California?
Well, the film is it's actually part of at least a trilogy of films that my production company is doing, looking at the grand narrative of one American city, Oakland, California, through the lens of its public institutions. The first film came out in 2012, called The Waiting Room, and it took a look at access to health care through the lens of a public hospital in Oakland. And as that film, you know, was completed and went out into the world, we started thinking about, you know, what would be next. And we just noticed the tenor and the urgency around this conversation about the relationship between community and police. And we thought that it would be important to really go inside one of these departments. Oakland's department in particular was under an active process of reform as a result of a 2000 scandal, the Rioters scandal. They were under federal watch, and they were being forced to reform. And so we thought it was a really remarkable opportunity to try to get inside this department and understand what does that process of reform look like at this moment in time.
And how do you get the great access you had? I mean, it's remarkable how much you were allowed to put on film here. Was that because of the man who was the chief at the time, Sean Wendt?
It was a couple of reasons. I mean, The Waiting Room, that first film, it really resonated both locally and nationally. It sort of established my sort of relationship with a lot of people within the city. And as I was talking to various, you know, city leaders about getting access to the department, I had kind of already established, you know, my approach to storytelling. And so I think there's a little bit of trust there. At the same time, you know, this was a department that was making some progress because of that negotiated settlement agreement. The department was forced to make some changes, and they were making some headway. And when we began, I believe that they felt they had a story to tell. I think on our Facebook feeds and in the news, the police had been flattened out to sort of more of a two-dimensional narrative, and they wanted to sort of show what they were doing. And so we kind of came along at just the right time.
I mentioned in the introduction that it's been a few years since the Ferguson story here. In Oakland, as you point out, they'd already been having a lot of problems with the police and the community over the course of several years before that. What did Ferguson do to change that or make it worse in one way or the other?
I mean, I think Oakland's problems go back generations. I mean, it goes back to the Panthers. I mean, this is a city that gave birth to the Black Panthers because of that contentious relationship between the police and the community. This is a city where Black Lives Matter was born. You know, I think Black Lives Matter emerged from activists in Oakland. And so it's got a very deep and complex relationship. The department has a very deep and complex relationship with this community that goes back, you know, quite some time. When Ferguson happened, I think that it just brought a sharpness and a clarity to the conversation that hadn't existed before. And, you know, there's a line there in the film where one of the instructors says, you know, the protesters protested in Oakland longer than they did in Ferguson. I don't know if that's true, but certainly, you know, when we began shooting the film, we had originally intended to spend time on the streets and in dispatch trying to understand what makes this department tick. And we found ourselves filming nothing but protests for weeks. And this was right after Darren Wilson was not indicted in the shooting of Michael Brown. So that, you know, immediately gave us a sense of how how big of an issue this has been for the city for a long time.
In stories along those lines that have been told here, there is still an enormous amount of distrust by the African American community of the police. And many of them say, we won't even call the police, even if we need help. Is that true in Oakland, too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's true nationwide. I mean, I think, I grew up, I'm a black filmmaker. I grew up in the black church. I went to Howard University. And the narratives and the stories that are told and passed on from generation to generation in the black community are ones of injustice, of being treated unfairly, of being treated in a racist manner. And I think that it's very personal for a lot of, both activists and leaders within the African-American community, but also just, people trying to get by day to day, that these stories are real. And I don't think there's a full acknowledgement of that history and of that treatment by the police themselves. And I think because of that, these communities and in particular the activists, which drive a lot of the change around these issues, felt that it was time to, to make a stand and to say, this does matter, our lives do matter, and they're because of the great consequences inherent in this relationship between police and community, the consequences are great. And so I think that the combination of both a local story but also a national reality kind of collided at that moment.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here, even though what happened in Oakland doesn't have any direct relationship to what's happening here in St. Louis. It kind of does, because there's a national story here and, as you mentioned, a history between the community and the police. And I wonder if you think that paradigm has changed for the better, and if not, how can it?
I think the film captures a moment in time. We filmed for, 2 years after Ferguson, showing this department trying to change, trying to respond to this national call for accountability, trying to operate, under federal guidelines that were forcing them to change. And what you see in the film is both the hope for that change, but also the challenges that continue to face departments in terms of, the culture of departments, the ability for individual officers who behave badly to affect the perception of the entire department. So while the film shows a lot of progress being made, it also takes a deep dive into some very dark places in terms of, where that culture is broken, and really raising serious questions about the role of oversight, the role of federal oversight and on our departments, and also the role of civilian oversight boards. I'm really asking the bigger question of, do we need a new model for community safety in this country? The film raises all those questions in a very complex manner, where it kind of asks you to hold multiple truths simultaneously, so you can see progress happening both individually, individual officers saying that they want to change and make a difference and be better, but also, where things can break down pretty quickly. And when that happens, do we have the ability to hold officers and institutions accountable? That's the big question.
The Oakland PD was and still is under federal oversight. What does that mean in real terms for the cops there?
I mean, I think it depends on who you ask. There's some controversy about federal oversight. Some believe, particularly within police unions and sort of police leadership circles, that these federal oversight mechanisms go on for too long. They cost taxpayers a lot of money, and they don't recognize change that is actually occurring within these departments. Others believe that it's a vital component of the ability for our, communities to believe that officers and institutions will be held accountable. I think, it's fairly rare that you see officers convicted and incarcerated for using force, because they're given a lot of leeway. The Graham v. Connor decision allows them to, if they perceive threat to themselves or others, that to use force. And that makes it very, very difficult for the justice system to determine fault and determine, an abuse of power. And so that's really the heart of the question right now, is that the communities, activists around the country are demanding that we find ways and mechanisms to hold those officers accountable when they do cross the line.
If federal oversight of an urban police department doesn't make things better, does civilian oversight?
That's the question. I think you're seeing more and more, that is part of what could be a new model for community safety.
Because that's what the pressure groups in these towns want, right? Civilian oversight?
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, we have community oversight already. Like, we a lot of people in these communities don't call the police, like you mentioned earlier. Like, they handle their own business.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think even to call the police when they solve the problem themselves. So that's one, like, a de facto civilian oversight. But, in terms of, it being an official mechanism, the jury is out in terms of whether these bodies really have tangible power. In other words, it's one thing firing a chief, it's another if an officer uses force because of inherent bias or because of racism or because of an abuse of power. Can a civilian oversight board lead to holding that officer accountable in a court of law? You still have a sort of disconnect between what could be a civilian oversight board and the justice system, which ultimately needs to hold those officers accountable. So I think it's an experiment to some degree. You're seeing it in various cities playing out, and I think we're going to have to wait and see whether these organizations can change behavior at the sort of operational level.
Paul Harris talking with Peter Nix, whose documentary The Force will air tonight on the Independent Lens series on PBS. I'm fascinated by the path of a couple of rookie cops that you have here. And by the way, congratulations on not only embedding with the chief and his people and following it at that administrative level, but getting these cops right out of the police academy. And you follow them to see what they are like when they get on the streets. One of them is named Cairo, and I can't remember who the other one was that you feature. But they're fascinating to see them actually getting on the job. How much do they change? Or how much did they change in those 2 years from the moment they first said, okay, now you're officially a police officer, to, okay, you've been a cop for a couple of years? What was that like?
And that journey that you talk about is like how the job changes you.
Yeah.
Originally, we wanted to do more of an examination of that. Like, what happens to an idealistic recruit? Because we actually started in the police academy. We didn't just film officers on the street. We spent ton of time in the academy itself watching these soon to be officers trained, basically civilians being trained how to be police officers.
And by the way, let me just interrupt you to say the classes that you show with instructors teaching these guys stuff that goes beyond just basic, how do you stop some car? How do you turn on the siren? It actually gets into the psychology of being a police officer. I don't think most people have ever seen that before. So kudos to you for getting that.
No, and it's an important part also of reform, like, talking about race, talking about the history of the Black Panthers, talking about, the stories that people tell each other about the police. And that is an outgrowth of this sort of department being forced to reform. The question is, can you take what you learn in this classroom and hit the streets and have it stick? I mean, everybody's seen, Training Day and Denzel Washington's character. He's the field training officer, and that's where a lot of people believe that your education really happens, is you're taught to be a cop on the street, on the job, by your field training officer, regardless of what you were taught in the academy. And that, paired with the realities of what these officers see on the street, which is it's for real, and they face very difficult situations. I think the average person doesn't understand that. And the job does change you. We tried to get a glimpse of that change over the course of 2 years with Cairo, and you could see, he was exhausted. After a while, you're, going call to call to call. You're working all this overtime, particularly in the midst of all those protests. They were clocking ridiculous hours, these cops, because the two things were happening simultaneously. They're both trying to keep the city safe, and they're trying to respond to this call for change and accountability. And so that the sort of juxtaposition of those two things we found to be fascinating, trying to see, you know, a department as a whole grapple with that, but also seeing young individual officers grapple with that. Because a lot of times, there's the saying, rookies make mistakes. You know, when you're out on the street and you're green and you're facing dangerous situations, you know, the chances of making a mistake are high, but the problem is the consequences are about as serious as they can get.
Yeah.
So there's very little tolerance for making a mistake, and that's the driving sort of idea behind this sort of movement right now. And woven into that is the idea of, you know, implicit bias, hidden racism, subconscious racism, the things that, you know, officers may not be aware of, but that impact their decisions.
And by the way, that difference between classroom learning and real world learning on the street is so brilliantly defined in your movie. Again, I'd never seen that from the perspective of somebody observing the cops in that way. And so kudos to you about that. But I do have one last question for you, and it has to do with observing. And I've talked to a lot of documentarians in my career, and I've never asked this question, so you get to be the guinea pig for it, Pete. There's this thing you probably know called the Hawthorne Observer Effect, which says if you're watching something, the act of you watching it is enough to change it. So your presence with a camera has to change what's going on there. I mean, if you're in the patrol car with Cairo or any other cop, he knows he's being filmed. If you're there with the chief or the mayor or the other personalities who are present throughout your documentary, that's got to change them. There's no such thing as, well, they're with us all the time, so we're used to it, is there?
Well, my philosophy on that, my sort of approach to this, and this is the art of the documentarian, and still photographers talk about this a lot too, that moment when you snap the frame, you're trying to capture some degree of the truth, an authenticity. And with documentary, it's just like anybody. Like, you go on a first date, you go on a job interview, you're going to perform. You're going to perform. You want people to see you in a certain way.
Yeah.
And the key to sort of getting beyond that and getting to a truth and authenticity, and fiction storytellers write this into their scripts, is you put your character in a moment of crisis, because crisis reveals truth. Because your character tends to be revealed in a moment of crisis, and so I oftentimes will wait for those moments when the people that I'm filming are in a moment of crisis, because they tend to reveal sort of the depth and truth of who they are. Also, time is a big one. You know, the longer you spend with an individual or a group of individuals, the less that they can pretend, the less that they can keep that veneer of some projection of their own, of a false reality, that their truth and their personality and their character will be revealed over time. And so that's, you know, our films, we tend to spend at least a couple of years embedded in environments, getting to know people, and that's sort of the value proposition of our work.
Well, you got a lot of it in this documentary. It's called The Force. It'll air tonight at 8 o'clock on Channel 9 here in St. Louis, and at all the PBS stations across the country on the Independent Lens series. It was produced and directed by this gentleman right here, Peter Nix. Thank you so much for your time today, and congratulations on the film.
All right, thanks for having me on.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.